Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shay's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shay's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Infuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Wang!
Ah, no Joey D, so someone's got to do it for Wednesday.
All right.
But running the boards is me, but also the show's namesake, BJ Shay. He's right over there.
Yes, I am.
Vicky screwed me up with that Wednesday.
Sorry.
On today's show, we will get comic book talk from BJ, catch up on everything he's reading.
Mm-hmm.
We will definitely talk about Loki because, that's what we've been doing the last few weeks. And I will actually also talk about what The Simpsons have done with the Loki-verse.
What?
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's very interesting what they've done. And of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeekignition.com. It's gonna have our blogs, podcast, and more. Or just search for BJ Shay's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app.
Yeah, so many ways to get a hold of us. Contact us via social media, via email, but definitely listen to us because, well, my fragile ego needs it. And let's get right into comic book chalk.
Yeah.
Chat and talk.
Yes.
I'm a train wreck, but lots of stuff happens on New Comic Book Day. And BJ, what have you been reading?
Well, I've been reading, of course, the world's greatest comic magazine, who's celebrating, how about this, 60 years of the Fantastic Four.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They got a really cool 60 years logo on the latest issue, number 33. Also, it's funny, I mean, you must be a prognosticator, sir, because we were talking about that very antagonistic relationship between T'Challa and Namor.
Yeah.
And boy, do they not show up in this issue. not the greatest of friends.
No, not even frenemies at that point.
But you're like, okay, well, why are they together? And also the Fantastic Four, what's happening? Well, it's because Dr. Doom is getting married, and
what?
This is The Bride of Doom, Part 2.
Is it Sue Storm?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay, then this is going to be very interesting.
Yes, it's his herald, as he calls her. She's a defender. She got lots of superpowered ability, and her name is Victorious. And she comes from, and I can't remember the name of the land, but it is not.
Latveria?
It's not Latveria, but it's like a competing country of Latveria, where like Latverians don't want, you know, people like her from her country, you know, sort of ruling their country, and vice versa. A lot of love lost between the two countries, but he's sort of bringing them together by marrying Victorious. So it's kind of like one of those things.
Oh, like the old school stuff.
So that's happening. It's not a marriage of love. I think that he's got a ton of respect for her and thinks she's amazing, and she's got a ton of respect for him and thinks he's amazing. So this wedding should go so well because they read and Dr. Doom had a bet, and the bet was interesting.
Simcarion?
Yeah, Simcaria.
Yeah,
or Simcaria.
There we go. That's it. Yeah. And that's been Spider-Man's been hanging around Simcaria with some characters as well. So there's a lot of political intrigue involved with this. But Reed and Dr. Doom had a bet. And the bet was that if basically Reed lost in this little competition that they had, that he would have to be Dr. Doom's best man. And Reed's like, what? Why would you? Why? Okay.
Because it's all Dr. Doom wants. He just wants to one-up Reed Richards. That's like the entire basis of their dynamic.
Well, also, he wants to kill him.
Oh, that too. Okay.
Yeah, that's there, too. But then, of course, but Reed's like, okay, but if we come here, you can't try to kill us. And you need to, be your best man means you're like, what the hell? And Doom's like, look, you know what, dude? Sirius burying the hatchet here. And he did. He went and he basically went to all of his robots and all of his technicians and said, you know, we're going to stop the Fantastic Four, kill them protocols. And they're like, what? Oh, yeah. What about all your plans? You got all these secret plans we're still working on. Yeah, we'll purge the software. We're not going to try to kill him anymore.
Wow.
Reed's my best man. And so how great is that? I mean, it was really like nobody believed it. And Sue's like, do you trust him?
It.
Ben's like, do you trust him? And Doom was really like, he's good to his word. And actually, they went there peacefully. I mean, you would think there's nothing that could screw this up. It's not like, I don't know, Johnny Storm would sleep with the bride before the wedding, would he?
Johnny Storm slept with the bride, didn't he?
Well... Johnny.
But they were just sleeping, right? It was a nap.
No,
oh, yeah. Big spoon, little spoon.
Well, either that, it was a bouncy nap. I'll just tell you. Yeah, Johnny.
Wow.
Oh, by the way, Johnny has a soulmate. Like, she came from another dimension-y world thing, and they really are soulmates. And so she, how about you're a soulmate, and you have these little devices on you, and you can feel the mood and everything that your other soulmate's going through. So she kind of knew he was cheating on her with Dr. Doom's wife to be. This was, you know what? This wasn't good for anybody.
No, it's not good for the old hothead to do something like that.
So, of course, Doom's pissed, and therefore all the death protocols are back on.
Oh, yeah. All the goodwill's off at that point.
Reed's like, we didn't bring any weapons. You said you wouldn't do it, Doom. He goes, your stupid brother-in-law swept with my wife. What do you want me to do? And even Reed's like,
what are you going
to
do about that?
And, you know, Ben's like, everybody's just like, but of course, and Sue is like, God dang it, Johnny! Of all the you, so that's what's going on in the world of Fantastic Four. Celebrate 60 years by having some good old fashioned f up the wedding plans.
Goodness gracious, there's some family dysfunction right there. If there's anything,
yeah. So, Jerry.
Yeah. So this is that's good stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. So you got to love that. Finally, got a new issue of Oblivion Song. That's the Robert Kirkman book where you got these Cthulian horrors trying to invade the world and. They've invaded, and it ain't pretty for everybody. What? Mm-hmm. I'm reading this right now. I didn't even read this.
Oh, God.
It said, is this the beginning of the end as we march towards our final issue? I guess Oblivion Song is coming to an end.
Oh, and they're actually announcing it as opposed to The Walking Dead, which just kind of surprised everyone with their final one.
No!
As in march to their final end, does that mean it ends in March?
He
put the emphasis on March. That's why I thought that's what.
Yeah, well, we're in June. Vicky, you may be right. I don't know. It's interesting because this comic is sort of, I don't know what's happened. Maybe it's not a good seller. Maybe the pandemic, it's been sporadic when it's come out. I think this was like 2 or 3 months ago, the issue before Oblivion Song came, this latest issue, number 31. But that's cool. I mean, it feels like it should come to an end. It'd be interesting to see if they ever make a series out of this, but if you love Kirkman, I think you're going to love this.
And you said this was issue 31?
Yes.
It looks like, according to the news reports, that it will end at issue 36. So,
they're marching towards the final issue, aren't they?
Yes, they are marching towards it, but I don't think that'll be actually March.
Well, if they take every couple of months to come out with it, though, like they've been doing.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Vicky may be on it. We'll see. Because, they've been sporadic. You know, I can't really predict, like, is it monthly? Is it bi-monthly? It's weird, like, when these issues have been coming out. Meanwhile, Spidey.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Do you guys know the Chameleon? Are you familiar with that character? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're getting a little bit of a deep dive into what he's all about, and I guess they should because the story arc is called the Chameleon Conspiracy. So
wasn't he in the third Spider-Man movie or the second? No. Was he in one of the movies or is that somebody else?
He's ever been in any of the movies.
Which one am I thinking of? The one that was the doctor or the professor?
Oh, is that the lizard?
Oh,
yeah.
The lizard.
Yeah. No, the Chameleon is more of a pale face kind of, Chameleon.
But I can see why Vicky thought that because the Chameleon can be a lizard, but this is more like.
Yeah, that's what I was confused.
Fair enough.
Yeah, this guy is, he's a Chameleon because he can look like anybody.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, boy, it's interesting as we're, we're starting to find out that maybe he's not the only one who's like him. You know, I always thought the Chameleon was just a dude that could put on masks, but apparently looks like he's kind of got some power that allows him to change his form. And that may have evolved over the years because I have forgotten like the origin story of the Chameleon, to be honest, if there ever was one. Well, if there wasn't, they're making one.
There you go. Now. Yeah, maybe they're just re-upping it now at this point.
And I don't know if you guys know, but Spidey has a super spy sister named Teresa. He's got a sister, Teresa Parker.
When did that happen?
Yeah, that happened some time ago. Actually,
I'm like, no, I did not know about this.
I forgot all about her. So, and I don't even realize. I'm not sure if she's from another continuum or if she's from this world, and she just found out that Peter was her brother. It has something to do with their parents being labeled as bad people, like traitors to the country. Which is why his parents were killed. It wasn't just a random death that happened to Peter's parents. And so anyway, yeah. So that Teresa's, he's got a sister.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. And for somebody who might remember better than me as to whether or not she really is his sister, or is she a clone?
She's a Skrull.
Is she a Skrull?
I know a few weeks back, I did a geek sheet about things that you didn't know about Marvel characters' parents, and that apparently back in the day, Peter Parker's parents were actually S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
That might be why they were thought they were criminals, because they were probably, you know,
like
spies.
Disavowed all sorts of knowledge.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, I remember that one, Vicky.
Yeah, that does. And that does exactly sort of, which is why Teresa Parker's trying to figure out what's going on, if she's trying to clear her parents' names, get to truth of it all. Peter didn't even know she existed, so I don't know. Somebody may know. If you know, put it somewhere on our Facebook page in the comments and say, this is what's going on, BJ, because I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we'd love all that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what Spidey's been up to. And then also, finally, if you haven't, for all you Sweet Tooth fans out there, you know, Jeff Lemire has done another book, him and Dustin Nguyen. It's called Ascender, which, of course, they did Descender. And this is a nice sort of sequel to the Descender series, but it's all coming full circle.
Oh.
The world of Descender and the world of Ascender have come into each other finally.
Wow.
And startling secrets are unveiled. Oh, yes.
Ooh, the artwork, it looks really cool. I want to say the Sweet Tooth, so the show was gorgeous. The artwork's a little weird. For the comic.
For Sweet Tooth. I haven't seen Sweet Tooth. I didn't even, you know, I wouldn't have even known that Sweet Tooth was a comic, except it said based on the Jeff Lemire series. And I'm like, Jeff Lemire, I know that name.
Yeah,
but Ascender, the artwork looks a lot nicer than Sweet Tooth, not going to lie.
Yeah, and this is a cool world that if Sweet Tooth has any kind of amazing success, I feel like they might try to do this, because it's a wonderful story. It is a story that, the Descender story, and I have to thank, I forget our listener's name, but one of the listeners of the Geek Nation sent us a bunch of comic books, and the one they sent me was Descender, and
wow.
I turned out to love it. Yeah, I want to really thank that listener who, this was many years ago.
It was many years ago.
But I've really enjoyed the series. Dustin Nguyen, by the way, the artist that you talked about, Vicky, the artwork, his watercolor work is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's a great story. It is a story about a little boy. That's all I'm going to say. It's a story about a little boy, and then it becomes a story about a little girl, and then we're starting to see what happens when this little boy and this little girl finally get to meet.
Oh, neat. Okay,
wow. And that's all I'm going to say, because there's a lot of surprises and cool stuff that's happening. And I don't want to say anything more than that. There's a great connection between this little boy and this little girl. And it is just so well done. It really, really is a fantastic situation. Again, it's called Descender is the first series, and we're currently in Ascender. It's on Image Comics, and it's good stuff. It's good stuff. As the little boy is about to meet the little girl, and you're like, whoa. And there's a lot of great characters in here. I will say one of my favorite characters is a drilling robot. Its job is to drill, but you know what? It makes the Hulk sound intelligent.
Is his name Driller? I'm picturing Bender with a drill.
His name is Driller. And Driller has one line. He's supposed to just be a drilling robot, but instead he ends up doing a lot of killing. His famous line is, Driller is a real killer. You know, and usually that means he's about to do some killing. He's not the smartest robot that ever hit, but he's good to have on your side.
Somewhat more catchy than It's Clobberin' Time, but still kind of gets the point.
Driller is a real killer, you know, and it's good stuff. I really, really enjoy Descender and Ascender on Image.
Awesome, perfect. And now we do have to talk, because it is Wednesday. As of right now, the season series finale of Loki is out there, but we are not talking about that one.
Oh, we're not?
No, we are not.
Oh.
We are talking about the penultimate episode. So if you want to listen to what we have talked about and then go back and watch that one, you can see how we're doing. going, and then also go and see the finale of Loki on Disney Plus.
Loki.
Now this one is episode 5, which was Journey into Mystery.
Which, do you know what that is?
That was, and I do just because I looked it up.
Oh, okay.
Because of all the Easter eggs and stuff out there. But that was the original comic book that Thor and Loki were both in.
Yes.
Oh.
So that was a very huge thing.
I love that title.
This episode has more Easter eggs than Easter weekend. There is so many things going on in this that I was like, oh, I'll look up an article that lists all of them and we could talk about that. That'd be like
so
a 2-hour
many.
Podcast. So we can't really do that. But at the end of the season 4 was the first time, or episode 4 was the first time that we had a chance to get a mid-credit scene. And that one was huge because we thought Loki got gacked by the old
Time Authority. Yeah,
the Time Authority
purged.
Stun guns.
We thought he was purged.
Yeah, they thought they got that. Turns out, no. There's a whole bunch of Lokis looking over him. 4, in fact, including Boastful Loki. Did they call him Original Loki?
Classic Loki.
Yes.
Kid Loki, and then Alligator Loki.
Who might be my favorite.
Good old Alligator Loki.
Looking at something that looks like maybe an apocalyptic event. Turns out that the little purge sticks that they use in order to get rid of people from the timelines doesn't actually disintegrate and kill them. It just puts them at the very end of time. That was an interesting thing for them to do, but it also made sense when they killed the main star of the show.
Yes.
Like at the end of that, I was like, that's BS. Turns out it really was.
Yeah.
They didn't even kill Mobius, which was great.
Yes.
Like, I really love the fact that they didn't do that. Because
the second main star of the show, which I thought, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, because Owen Wilson is killing it as Mobius. Like, seriously, like, one of my favorite characters when it comes down to all of this. And every one of these characters have been so good. But, so, boom, we go to the end of the, basically the end of time, where it's just a giant dump for anything that the TVA has deemed to be a variant that needs to be purged. Well, they just kind of dump them there, but then also there's a giant Tempest dragon smoke monster named Eliath.
Yes.
And he's the thing that actually will purge and destroy whatever is out there. So it's just huge remnants of this wasteland. And of course, Lokis. Because what do Lokis do? They survive.
They survive.
Yep. And so we get those Lokis, which was fantastic. Even in another amazing scene where we got even more Lokis.
Yeah, that
which
was funny.
The only fight scene in this episode was one where, well, every single Loki basically betrays each other.
Yep.
So I just wonder, how do you guys feel about this episode? I thought it was really cool in story terms and visually beautiful.
Yeah.
But it was neat to see all those different Lokis, but also progress the story pretty well, actually.
Yeah. I love the deep dive Loki's taking into himself. You can see the growth of he's seeing every version of himself, and he's just like, God, this is who I really am.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course some of the evolved Lokis, like the classic Loki, Kid Loki, and Alligator Loki, and Boastful Loki, as it turns out, wasn't as evolved as we thought.
No, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Along with what is it, President Loki?
President Loki, RIP to his hand. Thank you, Gator Loki.
Hilarious. the scream and everything. I'm just cackling like an idiot. Oh my God.
And I just, even the takeover plans, you know, it's just like, it's just, they couldn't even figure that out.
Yeah.
They couldn't even get that right because they were betraying each other in the middle of their betrayal. And it was nice to see that some Lokis were figuring out, we probably shouldn't do this to each other. That was really cool. It's to see him grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and to really, which we saw him grow a little bit anyway. Like, we went, given the opportunity to not stray from the time stream and just live his life the way he did.
Yeah.
You know, the fate of his mother, everything that went down, him and his brother, and then his, you know, being there when Odin left the plane. That all, you know, he did mature.
Yeah.
And so we knew he had it in him. At least this version, we knew he had it in him because he was the one that did all that had he not just taken the Tesseract and branched himself.
And it was fun to really actually see how these different Lokis got to where they were, because you see an old Loki and he just explained that it was because he has powerful magic, which was a huge Chekhov's gun, because he's like, I don't deal with the blades. I honed my magic, and he made magic so powerful that even the Mad Titan himself couldn't see through the illusion, which kept him alive until he decided to go see his brother and then got screwed by the TVA.
Yep.
Or even just how cool, like, Kid Loki was, and how much that, he's supposed to be an antagonist for Thor, but he's never supposed to kill Thor.
No.
Kid Loki got varianted because he did.
I'm wondering how. Like, is it, I wonder if it was like an act of, I'm going to kill you because I want you dead, or I'm messing with you, like I turned into a snake and stabbed you, and oh crap, you died.
I think it would be something more along the lines of that, because all of the other Lokis gave Kid Loki massive respect for that, but he wasn't like boastful Loki. He wasn't talking about, oh yeah, I killed my brother. It was, I killed my brother. Just straightforward. And that little kid actor, I don't know who he is, but he's a fantastic. He was really good at that.
Yeah.
He was. That's, I'm looking for him.
It's a very good. It was a very good episode and a very, very good series. It is probably because I just love the character and I love the acting. It's my favorite out of all of the Disney Plus shows that have been out there. And you know, it's interesting the order that it's all put in and how the journey we've been taking on between Wanda. And it's funny, they're giving us like wild out there stuff with WandaVision. Then we get back down a little bit more realistic stuff, if you will, grounded stuff with Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
More, I want to say topical in the state of the world, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're giving us more wild out there stuff, but again, exploration of the mental health, you know, whereas like Vicky was talking about in Falcon and Winter Soldier, we had a lot of global issues.
I mean, but then, also, you know, PTSD, mental health as well with that.
Yeah, that's there too. Yeah, a lot of global issues, but then with Wanda and with Loki, we're getting it more localized, which is really wonderful for mental health, because that's where it all starts. It starts with the
person. Absolutely. And with Wanda, it was an exploration of grief, and then also the exploration of how magic works now, and especially with the chaos magic. So there's two aspects of that episode. With Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it was really about the state of the world after the blip, and then also with the PTSD and all, the mental health and all of that. And then with this one, I really felt it's more about self-love, loving yourself, through many variants of yourself, and then also showing off the timeline and kind of setting the stage for that. So each three of these shows are setting up different aspects of the MCU to kind of get everybody ready for whatever's coming.
Yeah, and the basic order versus chaos.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the idea that when somebody tries to control too much, or when somebody's chaotic too much, if you will, without that balance, that's the big message I get from this, is that this world is out of balance. The TVA is definitely out of balance. They want is order, and there's fear there behind whatever this order is. And of course, Loki is the ultimate chaos guy, but then also it's out of balance when he's just Mr. And you see the everything coming together, and it is such a good series.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's only six episodes.
I know.
It feels like I've watched 12 episodes.
I cannot wait until this. Oh, I can actually go and watch the series finale or season finale or whatever the hell they were calling it with this one, episode six.
And what I think I love the most, I was thinking just now, is I feel like Tom Hiddleston plays a really lovable bad guy, and like, because he was the bad guy,
super charismatic
in the first, first Loki, and he's always kind of betraying people, so he's always technically the bad guy, but we love him. And he has done such a good job doing the whole redemption arc, like changing his ways, not even just the subtle facial features when he was looking at Sylvie, when he turned to hug Morbius, like, because this was his friend. Like, there's so many times he has said goodbye, or he has completely screwed over people he supposedly loves. And for him to have that very human moment really shows how he's changed.
I was so happy that they hugged and there was literally no backstabbing from anybody at that point. They just hugged
and
Mobius
cheesy.
Just went right back into the tempad door. And
well, don't forget the line from Mobius, which was the greatest one, though, when they hugged and he said to Sylvie, "You're my favorite."
Yeah, you're still my favorite.
Yeah, because he's a huge fan.
Yeah, I mean,
in a sense.
Yeah, it's and even Sylvie, who really we thought big badass, she's caused a lot of chaos, done a lot of horrible horrible things. And then, you know, in a short amount of time, she's become very likable. And also, you can really appreciate where she's come from. That's good. It's just good writing and good acting in a short amount of time to have us feel what we feel about these people.
And in this final episode coming up, we're going to see what Mobius is going to be dealing with Renslayer. Because
he's
going
to burn
thing,
it to the ground.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with Renslayer and if that's going to be coming about. Because now, does she have a new purpose? I don't know. I feel like, first off, she's a terrible liar. Like, the actress is so good at showing off a bad liar.
Yeah.
Because anytime she's talking, I'm like, she's lying. So we have to figure that out. And then we do see that Loki and Sylvie, with the power of friendship, make enough magic to open up and enchant, well, Aeloth, but also open up to what seems to be a castle?
Yeah.
An interesting thing. And now everybody is pointing at Kang the Conqueror, because we know that he's going to be the big baddie in Quantumania. But also, remember everybody, just like, don't get duped like WandaVision, like everyone thought Mephisto was going to show up. We might not see a big bad like that with this. Just be ready for it and just kind of have fun with it without maybe the rampant speculation. Or, I mean, hell, do what you want. Just prepared to not see maybe a Kang the Conqueror when we get to the end of this.
And just in case you're wondering, Kang the Conqueror is going to, like you said, is going to be in a Quantumania, and he's going to be played by Jonathan Majors, who you might remember from Lovecraft Country.
Yes, and I'm sad that Lovecraft Country isn't going to be renewed for a second season, but
Boo.
I still need to watch the first one all the way. But yeah, so excited to see where that's going to happen.
The show's not getting a second season, dang it!
I know, right? And then finally, with this, very excited for Loki, but also kind of a tie-in, and this really was essentially maybe an extended commercial, but The Simpsons put out The Good, The Bart, and The Loki, which is an episode... but not an episode, because it's about 6 minutes long,
yep.
So definitely easy for you to digest right away, where Loki gets sent to Springfield. And then hijinks ensue, including a cameo by the Springfield Avengers, which include maybe Ralph Wiggum as the Hulk.
Of course.
It's a very short little fun clip. I mean, 2 to 3 minutes. The entire thing is 6 minutes, because in true Marvel fashion, in order to have some fun with that, they have three mid-credit scenes.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's two while the credits are going, and then one at the very end, so stick around for all of that. It's 6 minutes total, so you'll have some fun with that. It's really enjoyable, especially with The Simpsons. I haven't watched The Simpsons in years, but this is like one of those where like, yep, I remember how much fun The Simpsons were, and it's great. But now it is time to get to...
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
What do you got, Vicky?
Well... some more Marvel news.
We talked a lot of Marvel, but there's a lot of stuff dropping recently.
Right, but like some information that I found very, very, very fascinating is musician Megan Thee Stallion is going to be entering the Marvel Universe.
What?
Why?
Apparently, according to reports, she's going to be making a guest appearance on She-Hulk.
Is she
going to
be Megan Thee Stallion then?
Oh, you know what? I've heard that She-Hulk is kind of like a comedy. I've also heard it's
weird.
Not what I thought it was going to be, like a real, you know, serious series, and apparently they're taking a comedic take.
Sitcom. It doesn't really say what's going to be going on with Megan Thee Stallion, but she's going to portray a fictional character version of herself, basically, in a reoccurring role. So I think she's not going to necessarily play herself fully, but a version of herself, like a cartoony version, I guess.
All right.
But yeah, apparently She-Hulk is going to be breaking the fourth wall. It's going to be about a half hour show.
Oh.
It's supposed to be, you know, more of a comedic take on the character.
Well, I have no idea about Megan Thee Stallion's acting abilities. I have none whatsoever. I only know her
herself, it should work.
Well, yeah, right?
You hope. I mean, you really hope that somebody saw something in her and said, you know what, you can act. Because, it's tough when somebody is acting, because Tatiana's a great actor. And to have people that aren't as good next to a great actor, you can tell sometimes. You can go like, oh boy, all right, well, you know, they had money for most of the cast, and then they didn't. I mean, so...
it's interesting, because, you know, like, Tatiana Maslany is fantastic, and I think of her as just Orphan Black, but I feel like she'll be able to... she's good enough that I think she can pull it off, because there were some funny moments in Orphan Black that are just real, and I was thinking, how can you make a She-Hulk movie and make it serious? Like, you really can't. I think you're just going to fall back into that Thor category, where it's like Thor, the Norse god, whatever. like, that first movie was fine. The second movie was... But you need that funny in order to keep people captivated. Otherwise, it's just... It's funny because you have to add the humor to make it more believable, I guess.
But a 30-minute sitcom, you know, whereas Thor had humor, a lot of humor in Love and Thunder, Ragnarok.
They're not calling it a sitcom. They call it a half-hour legal comedy.
That seems like something like a Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something along those lines.
Like, sitcom, it makes me but think of Laugh Track.
But that's the thing. See, I wish I, you know, the definition of situation comedy, it really depends. I mean, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. If I don't know what you call a comedy that doesn't have a laugh track, but it's a half hour long.
Yeah. I mean,
film before a studio audience? Is that it's like situation comedy is what it stands for, and she's in a situation. She's a lawyer.
Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine might be the best.
Like, was The Office a sitcom? I imagine it was, right?
Yeah.
Without a laugh track, but maybe there is a difference. Maybe, like Vicky says, it's got to be a laugh track to be a sitcom. I don't know.
I guess we'll find out next year when it comes out.
Oh, we got to wait a whole year.
I know.
Sorry.
But, you got some DC news.
Ooh.
Wait a second. Uh-oh. They're still around?
I know.
Hater.
Well, sorry. This might be good. We do not like Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder does put out some really pretty movies, some fun movies. But apparently, he's going to be re-teaming up with Netflix for his next movie. And it's going to be a sci-fi epic.
He did Army of the Dead, right?
Yeah, yes. He did Army of the Dead. And then also he's going to be working with the prequel of that, which Gareth talked about on Friday, which is Army of Thieves.
Oh, right.
So he's still kind of deep into that world. But this isn't that, though.
No, this is something called they're going to be working on Rebel Moon. And
how do I know that? Is that a manga?
No. It sounds familiar.
That's Sailor Moon.
Snyder, who is also co-writing the script with Shay Hatton and 300 collaborator Kurt Johnstad.
All right.
In an official statement, he explained that the project is a science fiction epic that he sees as a tribute to both Akira Kurosawa and Star Wars, which was itself a part of a tribute to Kurosawa.
Mm-hmm.
Says, this is me growing up as an Akira Kurosawa fan, a Star Wars fan. It is my love of sci-fi and giant adventure. My hope is that this also becomes a massive IP and a universe that can be built on. I've spent the last 2 or 3 years building out this universe, and every corner has been painted in. I've been doing designs, constantly drawing, and really cultivating its fertile ground to make the world fully realized.
He's looking to make his own Star Wars epic.
Yeah, it's interesting. I used to be pretty critical of what Zack Snyder does, but it finally hit me only because I watched the Japanese Spider-Man episode of the 616 on Disney Plus.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
And I will tell you that in that, you know, because I didn't even know there was a Japanese Spider-Man, but they talked about, you know, having to present basically an American comic book hero to the Japanese audience, where if you look at manga compared to American comics, it is really, American comics are illustrated books, where manga are more like storyboards that you make for a movie.
Yeah, good call, yeah.
And when I think of Zack Snyder, it's like, it's not so much about the dialogue, and sometimes they even get really frustrated at the dialogue or maybe even the plot, but it's more about the imagery. One thing about Zack Snyder, you can definitely say the man knows how to make images. He really, really
makes
does
beautiful movies.
Yeah. And if you think about it, that's the perfect thing for him to homage would be Star Wars, because Lucas kind of falls into that sort of same mannerisms as well. Most of the time, his dialogue, if it's not casually disregarded by the actors and they just kind of do their own thing, it's stiff, wooden at best.
Yeah, and I don't know Iwakara.
Akira Kurosawa.
Yeah. I don't know much about his work.
The Seven Samurai, Yojimbo.
They were a writer, director, and everything.
Okay.
One of the old school, super influential, like, this is black and white movie days.
Nice.
Samurai movies.
Samurai movies from Japan.
So, all right, I'm excited.
So
a Star Wars mixed with a samurai vibe. His love letter to both. I feel like it could be something good.
Yeah, Star Wars had a sort of King Arthur vibe,
you know.
So to have a sort of a sci-fi epic, and look, epics are great. I'm looking forward to the Foundation epic that's coming out. I think it's on Disney Plus, based on the Asimov novels, and that's an epic world. I think that's starting either this month or next month. Anyway, Apple TV Plus, excuse me.
And I mean,
that's the problem is a lot of people don't have Apple TV Plus.
Yeah. I know you were trying to recommend what was Jason Momoa where everyone's blind.
Yeah,
And I did not see that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think I got the picture, but I didn't even finish it myself. But Ted, it's the one that has Ted Lasso, which of course everybody's loving that Ted Lasso series.
Okay,
Apple TV Plus. Yeah. But the Foundation is epic. I mean, it is an epic, epic Asimovian masterpiece. Ooh. I hope they do it well. But there's, I mean, so the idea that he's also throwing some epic out there, you know, that Zack Snyder for sci-fi, I'm there.
And there's another Zack Snyder related news coming out. Well, not really about him. One of the other movies, I forget that he did this, Sucker Punch.
Oh yeah. That's a good, I like that movie.
So the actress who played Amber, Jamie Chung, who you probably know her, she did the voice of Go-Go in Big Hero 6. She was in Blink in The Gifted, which sucked because she did a great job. I loved her in that. Just the show was
Oh, right. I remember her.
She was Valerie Vale in Gotham. She's one of those actresses you're like, I've seen you everywhere. Because I think she was also in the later seasons weren't that great of Once Upon a Time. She played Mulan. She's been in everything.
She's getting work, you're saying. Yeah, she's getting work.
She's in everything, right? But she's actually come out saying, like, you know, the theatrical cut is PG-13, but it feels like such an R-rated movie. And I think that's one of the reasons why they altered the story. And it's been so long, but there would have been a lot more detail, and each scene would have been extended by 10 minutes. We shot the hell out of that movie, and it was fun. My character was the pilot, but I do know that the fighting sequences were much longer. Gosh, it felt like we trained for so long for them. The whole experience itself was 6 months, so there's got to be more out there. So she's calling out, basically saying, where is the Snyder cut for Sucker Punch?
See, that's the thing now. Now that they've done the Justice League Snyder cut, every single Snyder movie now is going to, they're going to want a Snyder cut of the movie.
That's fascinating.
But,
wow.
I mean, and she has a good point. It was PG-13. It was one of those, like, it got crapped on so much that I didn't even want to see it.
Yeah, it was, the story was whatever it
fell
was.
Flat.
But yeah, the visuals were definitely, when you're talking about just the fact that he has a lot of love for Kurosawa, there was a lot of that sort of.
It's an imagery movie.
Yeah, imagery, and there's a lot of samurai, some mech stuff as well, too, I remember. Yeah. Oh, God, that was a long time ago when that movie came out, though. So maybe they'll just, Zack Snyder's going to go back and just recut everyone. One of his movies all over again.
I mean, especially a movie like this, like, make it a rated R movie. I think there is a place in the world where quote unquote comic book typey movies can
be. And that place, HBO Max.
Right?
Well, I'm really hoping that the next Deadpool, since it's part of the MCU, well, I don't know if it's MCU, but Marvel's going to have it. I hope that they're going to keep that with an R rating, because if anything, that movie definitely needs an R rating.
And I mean, there's a lot of good actors in that, so I would love to see it, like, redeemed, if you will.
Absolutely.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.